Meeting will come to order. We don't quite have a quorum yet, so we'll, oh, we do have a quorum, so we can deal with the minutes, Representative Scalzi.
Chair, I would move the minutes from February 3rd, 2009.
Representative Scalzi moves minutes of February 3. Any changes, corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Members, we're trying to use this year as much as we can to be prepared for anything relative to the federal stimulus package, should that be necessary, or to prepare us for next year. And so we're sort of working our way through what are some of the agency status reports, and today we're doing transportation. And as you know, with transportation, we only do geo bonds, and that means we only do local roads and bridges. So we're focused on that very narrow issue today. But I looked in the packet and saw that MnDOT has really quite a bit of information. And so who's coming forward? Mr. Gray? You can, or do all three of them want to come forward, or how would you like to? So yeah. We're sort of looking for update on past bonding authorization, what your progress is to date, and maybe what's coming up in the future. I know in the case of local bridges, you do all the work in advance, and a lot of that paperwork is already done for some of the projects.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Kevin Gray, Chief Financial Officer for MnDOT. And I believe you have a couple of handouts that I thought we could work from today. And my understanding, the initial focus was on the what is referred to as the GO bond appropriations. And I'm going to refer to this page in your handout that has lots of numbers on it. It looks busier than I think it will be as we talk through it. But yes, Madam Chair, you're correct that we have two buckets of bonds, if you will, that typically are associated with the Department of Transportation, MnDOT. One is our trunk highway bonds, and I'll briefly talk to that at the end of this review. But today's focus is on our GO bonds that are really general fund-backed bonds, and that's the distinction. As I mentioned in one of the Transportation Committees, all of our bonds are GO bonds. They're all general obligations. It's just that we have trunk highway bonds that are unique to our trunk highway fund, and we also have our general obligation, general fund backed bonds. So what I'll do is I'll set the table, so to speak, with respect to how we're going to cover all of this. And Rick, you don't have to go too far. And just give you a sense of what we've pulled together here. First of all, there are two broad categories of general fund GO bonds that we're going to talk about. One is really run through our state aid division, if you will, local bridge bonds and local road bridge bonds. And you'll see that there's quite a number of different authorizations ranging from, 40 million all the way down to the Duluth Aerial Lift Bridge of $1 million. Those are all run through, if you will, and monitored by our state aid function. The other bonds that are GO bonds, as they're commonly referred to, are in our multimodal areas, and we've organized listing to give you a sense of the outstanding appropriations, and we'll talk a little bit about their status. But the multimodal functions of freight, transit, and airports, and that is consistent with our budget. So at this point in time, I think walk through it, I would say that as an overview for local bridges and for local road programs, we are very much on track. The state aid community, the counties and cities are very diligent, very prepared, very on top of both their requests and their usage and readiness for use of the funds. So we don't have any issues that we deem lingering here in terms of bonds that aren't being either extended or encumbered to date. If you'd like to talk about any specific bucket, or would you like to have a line item review?
Not line item, but and people can certainly ask questions along the way, but if you have a preference about how you want to proceed, we're open.
Well, Well, I think, Madam Chair, what I'll do is I'll give you a quick thumbnail sketch and then be open to questions. And I think the quick overview, just for expediency, not to hide any information, we've got good information if you need more, but all the 2005 authorizations, if you recall, the even number years, we do authorize bonds for either local bridges or local road improvement program, which is unique to the state aid community. The first amounts of $40 million, 5 and 5, are essentially entirely not only encumbered but also expended. So we've made great progress on addressing those, and that's to be expected with 2005 authorization. In 2006, we again had a large a bridge bill and a number of other smaller items. Essentially, all of those are well underway. I believe of the $52 million, there's approximately $1.7 million that remains, and there are plans and en route and on track for using that money as well. So we feel real comfortable with that money. I do know that on the Staple Overpass that there's some planning that is still working through, but that project I believe is on track as well. So as we look back at 2005 and 2006, we were fortunate to have back-to-back years of some local road bridge and road improvement bridge bonds. 2008 is still where we're working through a number of these. To date, we've extended or encumbered $15 million of the $50 million, so we're on a good path there. One of the probable needs there relates to the Lowry Avenue Bridge, and that is still in the process of pulling their financing and funding together and their status. The flood monies, the $26 million, that's a unique appropriation reflective of the Southeast Minnesota flooding situation and a special authorization from the legislature. And while that money has not been expended, a large balance remains. They are basically ready to go out of the chute come first spring thaw. And hopefully with that won't accompany another round of flooding. But they're ready to go with the projects there. And I think that we're in the same position. We have a larger remaining balance of the local rural road safety program, but projects have been identified, and the state aid community is very aggressive in identifying which projects have been selected. So with that, I think that the general overview is that we feel very comfortable that this money's are going for their intended purposes, that are on track to get out the door, and there's been tremendous progress made on our older authorizations and our most current one as well.
Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, I've got a question on bridge replacement. When you replace a bridge, how often is the bridge moved to someplace else?
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that is a case-by-case basis, and I would have to defer to the engineering community. I do know that on our local bridge replacement program, I don't think, unless it's a historic preservation bridge item, that we typically salvage the bridge. We try to use materials and if you will, recycle wherever possible, but it's not, I think it's more of the exception rather than the rule that we relocate the bridge. Perhaps our state aid engineer could talk to that a little bit more.
Representative Erdahl has a follow-up question, I think.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a historic bridge in Meeker County on Highway 24, and it is being moved to to Maurer County. But my point is this. If that happened, MnDOT didn't notify anyone in Meeker County, the county commissioners or the highway engineer, what was going to happen to that bridge. And the sentiment in Meeker County was to keep the bridge there and use it some other place, a snowmobile trail or whatever. And what I'm saying is I would caution you in the future that don't agree to transport a bridge to another part of the state without at least telling the county of origin that that's happening.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, that's a good heads up. Typically with these historic preservation bridges, there's usually a lot of hullabaloo and focus on it, quite frankly, for a lot of good reasons, and so it's a little surprising to hear that, but I think that's feedback that I can share back at the agency. Certainly. Thank you.
Mr. Gray, I see that members are looking at the list that talks about the waiting list where plans are approved. And when we authorized the, what was the amount in 2008, $50 million, we had a list accompanying that we distributed whenever we talked about that amount. And you're saying that's all going forward. So those would not be reflected on this list, is that right? That's another set that we're already moving forward to, but now we're looking ahead to bridge projects that have not yet been funded. Would that be correct?
Madam Chair, that's my understanding. This list is a prospective list, but I'll let Mr. Jonas talk to that briefly and give a little background on how to build these lists and their state of readiness.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Rick Jonas from MnDOT State Aid Office, working with local roads and transportation, counties, cities, townships, and on this bridge program. If you're referring to a list that you had last year, we refresh that list every year, deleting the accomplishments, and then every year counties and cities are asked to revisit their inspection reports, update their priorities, and send us a new resolution of what they would like to accomplish within the next five-year period. And the list that we would have been showing you last year would have reflected an amount of about $120 million, if I remember correctly, was the total amount of bridge bonding dollars needed to accomplish what the local governments wanted last year. And the bridge bonding bill was $50 million. So there would have been this activity, and we now have a current waiting list. There are 112 bridges right now where the plans are approved and they're laying in our office waiting for funding so that they can move forward to bid opening stage. And to do that, there is local money and other money that's been assigned towards those bridges, but to capture the essence of what the traditional relationship to funding has been, $18 million of bridge bonding is what it would take to move that list of 112 bridges that are sitting there. Now, we have a longer list, and I think that has been circulated to the committee, that would show up to $70 million of bridge bonding could be spent this year by the local government. But they've actually got the plans done for this $18 million today.
Mm-hmm. And I guess what I was trying to clarify, what I understood from Mr. Gray is you have not yet expended all the $50 million from the 2008 bill. So would any of that be used to do the bridges that we have in front of us?
Madam Chair, yes. We have spent $15 million of the $50 million to accomplish projects on that list, and the remainder money will be used towards doing more. We have identified about 10 bridges that are receiving federal funds that are on that list that will receive $7 million of our remaining money in this summer's construction. We've identified two fracture critical bridges. Last year, our priority was to work on fracture critical bridges, and so we handpicked them off that list that we had last year. We still have a couple to go, so we have $2 million set aside for fracture critical bridges that we're going to pick off that list. And then we have $25 million set aside as per our understanding of to be for the Lowry Avenue Bridge in Hennepin County, which is a very large bridge.
Representative Solberg had a question.
Madam Chair, maybe that last statement helps me to understand it. I thought you said that, is there $15 million been appropriated or encumbered? Is that correct, of the 50? And then the 27 or 29... From the other ones that you said, the fractured, critical, et cetera. So you're about 40. Then does my question then is, this list that's in front of us, does that represent the rest of it?
Mr. Jonas?
Well, it's the way replacement plans approved, and if the plans are approved, then some of these go back to 07 as well. But does that represent the rest of the, and have they been encumbered?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, yes, you have a list there of 118 bridges It will take $18 million of bridge funding to move that whole bridge forward. There are projects that go back to 2007. Ordinarily, we pick first come, first serve off that list. That's been our tradition. And it's unusual that we'll have bridges that have been laying around collecting dust on our office, so to speak, the plans, waiting for funding because of our first come, first serve. But last year, given everybody's state of mind and the understanding that we were given, we selectively went through that list and grabbed those bridges that were fracture critical or posed some other public safety threat and prioritized those as opposed to the date that they arrived in our office.
So, Madam Chair, this list that I think that you must have as well, is my question then, is this the list that where they have been encumbered that much money in that, and does that take care of most of the bridge funds?
And
I don't know if he has this list.
I've heard you say, Mr. Jonas, that these have not been encumbered.
That's correct.
It's a waiting list and plans have been approved, but there are still bridges on this list that have not been encumbered.
That's correct, Madam Chair. We did 40 bridges last year with bridge bonding. 14 of them were fracture critical. They're not on your list. They're done. Those are left.
Well, Madam Chair, we don't have the list then of the ones that were funded other ones. Okay. My basic question is, though, has the $50 million that we've appropriated been encumbered or reserved for the $25 million for the Lowry Avenue Bridge and the other ones that you said were critical?
And what
the rest of it has been encumbered.
$50 million encumbered, $25 million reserved for Lowry, and the rest would be available to do some of these.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, Madam Chair, then I didn't quite understand it. And then this represents $18 million. Are you going down the list that's here, or is there some other criteria? And when do we encumber that?
Madam Chair, the list of 112 bridges that you've got, we have no identified source of money to work on that list. We have a plan to complement this year's federal funds that are coming into Minnesota, that we set aside $7 million of the 50 to match expected federal funds for this summer for a list of bridges that we have. You do not have that list. We also have $2 million for a fracture critical bridge that we're expecting to come into our office based on last fall's inspection. And then we have $25 million for Hennepin County. This last year, I need to mention to you, we did replace 161 bridges from all sources of money, and a lot was accomplished. We did that using only $15 million from the bridge bonding source. Remaining in our office looking for funding is a list of 112 bridges. That's the list you have, and there are more on the way.
And I think, Representative Solberg, you're getting some of the sense that we've had as we've had the bills the last few years in a number of areas, like Minsky Asset Preservation and others where there are pots of money, we've tried to distribute on the House floor. If you approve this amount, these are the projects that get done. And this one has been harder because it seems like more of a flexible list that, depending on where the counties are, and maybe there's other funding you're using, it's just been harder for us to say there's one list that takes $40 million, and if you approve this bill, they all get done. So I think that's some of what the membership is trying to figure out today.
You did a much better job than I am explaining that, but the bridge bonding funds are used to leverage and take advantage of opportunities that present themselves. So if federal funds come, or if counties are in a position to put some money towards the project and they need a little bit extra help, we don't stick to a rigid plan on the use of the bridge bonding. Additionally, last year, we didn't just go down the list like we ordinarily would have. We specifically placed, because there was an inspection requirement, we spent several million dollars on inspecting the fracture critical bridges and the gusset plates and reevaluating everything for safety. And any of those that we could save ourselves inspecting and replace them instead, because they're all from the 1920s and 1930s on the local system, We tried to. So we got 14 of those replaced this last year. So they weren't in sequence on your list. They were on the list. The locals were ready to go. The right of way was bought, and we made those a priority last year.
So would it be fair to say, for the committee who might be interested in these, you do not have enough money for the bridges on these two pages?
I have no money for those.
You have no money for those. So if we're motivated for local bridges, we see the list here.
Yes.
Okay. Did that clear it up? any further on local bridges? And you have a few other GO projects that you want to give us a progress report on?
Yes, Madam Chair. Members, I'm going to ask you to also, we passed out a brief narrative summary that does support the balance of the GO bonds on this page, and while I won't go through each of the categories, I think you're going to find that we're in a very similar position. I will talk to this briefly, and we do have our modal office directors here for any specific questions that might arise. But as I mentioned, that we have a number of bonds that have been authorized, and I think our list goes essentially back to 2005. I'm not aware that there are other bonds operated further to that haven't been fully utilized or canceled.
And I have to say, I'm sorry, it looks like Rick Plowski left, but members, you may recall that in 2007, the entire bill was vetoed, and that would have included ports for that year. And in 2008, the port was line item vetoed. So for 2 years, we have not had GO bonding for port development assistance.
Madam Chair, on that point, maybe I could just go to that. In terms of helping to read the schedule, you'll notice about at the end of the freight section of your one-page handout, it talks about 2006 port development assistance, $3 million. And 2005 port development assistance. Just for terms of reading the schedule, we did indicate the fiscal year of the authorization so that you have some frame of reference for the time frame in which the authorization was made in law. By the way, on the $3 and $2 million, it essentially is entirely extended. The ports have been very aggressive about utilizing that money and making good progress in the project. So I don't believe there's any balance remaining, but they've been very aggressive in utilizing those money. With that, I'll talk briefly about the rest of the freight. We have used historically bonds to help seed our rail service improvement program, and that is a program where we have, I believe it's a zero interest rate loans to short line shippers or carriers for development of freight initiatives, rail initiatives throughout the state. It's a competitive process, typically based on a solicitation. The loan repayments come back into the fund, and over time we're able to reissue those loans. The balance of the projects, I think that I would just say that there are plans in place for all of these monies, and I won't go into the individual line items unless the committee prefers to do so.
I'm sure. I'm sure on the rails, do you have a, it's a loan payback, do you have a balance in that fund? If you do have a balance, do you have a priority list for that balance?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, there is a nominal balance in the fund at this point in time. Over the next biennium, we hope to receive some receipts of loan payments coming into the fund. In part, the reason that the balance is low is because as part of addressing the budget deficit, we did take some monies out of that fund towards the general fund budget deficit.
Madam Chair, is that the $15
million? Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, no, the $15 million is an issue related to the state airport fund.
Oh, that's
I think the balance that was taken out for 8 and 9 from the what we call the Mercy Program or the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program was $6 million, $3 million out of each year. So loan proceeds coming our way were not made available for redistribution. They were instead directed towards helping the deficit.
Madam Chair, if I may, just then, do you have a number of the projects that are awaiting approval? Do you have a dollar amount for that?
Ray.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, no, I don't. I do know that they haven't gone with their formal solicitation because there's not enough critical mass currently. I am aware that there are projects, and we'll get that information to you.
Okay.
Members, you may remember, if you were along on that trip, visiting the Prairie Line track rehab and seeing the train going approximately 4 or 5 miles an hour. And their goal is a 94-mile line going 25 miles per hour. They are going to be receiving some federal money for that, but not it will certainly not do the total project. And there are lots of commodities being moved along that particular stretch of railroad.
Madam Chair, that's correct. My understanding is that could be multiple tens of millions of dollars of improvement to reach that goal of moving the train along faster than you can walk.
Solberg, were you?
Well, the train carries more than what I can carry, though.
Representative Wagenius has a question.
Thank you. I'm looking at the Northeast Minnesota Rail Initiative and am fully supportive of that. There's nothing here about a fast rail from the metropolitan area to Chicago. What is the status of that?
Madam Chair, I'm going to defer to our Office of Transit, which includes passenger rail transit, to give you a better background about that. I do know that this particular rail initiative was focused on the Duluth Depot, I think, so this was a more of a specific activity not related to the broader planning of the line. But I'll defer to Mr. Schadauer to talk to you about the status of our Midwest Rail Initiative.
Well, I see here, if I could follow up,
yes,
that MnDOT's working with a joint powers board to hire a consultant to begin the environmental studies for rail passenger service to Duluth. So the question I have is about going south.
Mr. Schadauer, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, my name is Mike Schadauer. I'm the director of the Office of Transit in MnDOT, and we're working closely with the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations on the state rail plan and issues related to passenger rail across Minnesota. Representative Wagenius, you're asking about the current project that's underway for the Northern Lights Express and how that...
Actually, she's asking for the one to Chicago.
Okay. So the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative is also doing some work right now, not to the same level currently that the Northern Lights Express is that would run to Duluth. Both of those projects received some grants from the Federal Railroad Administration in 2008 to further their work. For the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative, that was to do some alternatives analysis on the very large network hubbing from Chicago, so it's not any real work in Minnesota substance right now. It also includes some updating of the cost estimates that group did back in the early 2000s and some public relations.
I think you have raised my concern that what's going on is some work that's around Chicago. So the fear would be that there would be a rail system perhaps from Madison to Chicago and to St. Louis, or from Milwaukee to Chicago to St. Louis, and we would be isolated up here in the Midwest with reduced and very expensive air service. And so for our economic development, what's your plan for joining in? Mr. Schadauer.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, we are doing the state rail plan right now, which will be worked on over this calendar year, concluding at the end of this year. And we want that to be our method of looking at all the rail opportunities in Minnesota, and this is passenger and freight rail opportunities, and defining our priorities for investment. That route to Chicago could prove out to be the most important priority. It could prove out that other ones are priorities, but we need to do some analysis here to determine the best place to invest and make that recommendation.
As you're doing your analysis, are you looking at the potential that a train would stop in Milwaukee or Madison and then go south to St. Louis, and then we would be stuck because we were slow and not moving when other regions are moving?
Madam Chair, Representative, we are, I wouldn't put it in those terms exactly, we are looking at how we can make Minnesota be part of this network and what investments Minnesota could make to not only join Chicago but have a network in Minnesota, if that all makes sense for Minnesota. We obviously don't want to be isolated here. You're certainly right. You're defining some of the things that are going on in the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative right now, because Wisconsin is frankly ahead of us right now. Wisconsin's been doing work that improved their Chicago to Milwaukee corridor. They're now working and concentrating on their Milwaukee to Madison corridor. And after that, our conversations with Wisconsin DOT, their next priority is to help us join into that from the Twin Cities down to Madison. We need to get our part of that ready, and we frankly haven't been up till now. So this rail plan is our opportunity to get into that program and join up.
And Representative Genius, I believe we were assured by MnDOT, though we put the language into law last year because we thought we had to have that plan in order to receive federal money, we were concerned that it is not yet complete and that therefore we wouldn't be open to receive it if it was in the federal stimulus package. But MnDOT has assured us that for whatever reason, we have a little window of opportunity at which we don't have to have a formal plan, but we could still be, if there were federal stimulus money for the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative, we would still be in a position to receive some of that money for some of the study you're talking about.
That's correct, Madam Chair. The Federal Railroad Administration is actually working right now on their guidance for state rail plans. That was part of the law that passed late in 2008 for the Railroad Safety Enhancement Act. So for their future funding programs, they will require a state rail plan, but until they get their guidance together, they have told the states that states will be able to apply for funds under their grant programs, under that law, and under the Economic Recovery Act, or whatever that will be called, without having a state rail plan in place yet.
So I'm fairly confident that there is enough movement that should that be in the federal stimulus package that we're at the table and that we could receive the funds for the type of study you're talking about. I will mention, though, since the last time you and I were together at a rail meeting, I said there are some people who aren't here at the table, and they happen to be at this table. Representative Junkie and Representative Erdahl were not apprised of that particular meeting, and I've talked, I think, with both of them at this point, and I think you've got them on the list for future meetings. We have reached a point where, more broadly across the state, rail, passenger rail, and commuter rail used to be something that only people in the metro area thought about, but now they think about it in Rochester and St. Cloud and Duluth and Litchfield and Wilmer. And that state rail plan hopefully will bring all those interests together in a way that that serves the state equitably. I think that list of people who need to be invited probably has expanded a little bit.
Madam Chair, you are correct. We have added both of those legislators to the list, as well as representatives from the planning organization of their area of the state.
Representative Wiggins, were you finished?
I am. I still have this uncomfortable feeling that we are moving too slow and that we will be left out, because other people will be ready to go, Wisconsin's ready to go, and that the movement will be to the south of us, I mean to the south of Chicago, and not to us. So it's wonderful to be able to go to Wilmer and Litchfield, but if we all can't go to Chicago, and we can't move our goods and people fast, we're left out.
Good advice. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a follow-up, a year ago the committee went to the Union Depot and we all had little cranes on our tables, and some of this was discussed at that time, and a lot has happened in a year. But my question is, you know, when we're at the Union Depot, kind of an implication that high-speed rail would be coming into the Union Depot or moving up through existing rail or existing corridors. But I'd like a little more detail on planning, and it doesn't have to be here. Would it be correct to say that the plan that's being developed, you know, if you have a route that's identified along the Mississippi River corridor where Amtrak goes now, and a route along Highway 52, or a route that goes from Rochester up to the Minnesota River Valley and then across up into Minneapolis, if you're not on the plan, there's not going to be hope for the route. Would that be?
I think you have to add Representative Hansen to that list too.
Be prepared to add you, Representative Hansen.
I think that would be important, because that conversation, it matters if you're at the table there. So I think that would be a good addition to the list.
All right.
And I believe Representative Leader is hearing a number of these bills, and I'm assuming we'll be referring them to this committee, so we may have a day where we look at some of those bills.
Madam Chair, I don't think we should hear them any. I think just pass it. I've heard it all today.
Okay. We probably should... Representative Erdahl, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. And just quickly want to thank Mr. Schottauer for the... conversations we've had the last couple of days, and just briefly for the edification of the committee, perhaps you can update them a little bit on, you know, what could be happening for somebody who really wants to go to Fargo.
To Fargo Moorhead, that's right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, today you can ride a train to Fargo if you want. Amtrak service runs there, but what we're trying to do is look at the vision for rail for Minnesota for the long term. And that could include improvements to not only the passenger service that we have today, which is very minimal, but to the freight service as well. You can't do one without the other, obviously. And so we're trying to bring in experts from around the nation as a consulting team that can help us with that task, that can do some economic analysis, some analysis of the infrastructure that's in the state, and help us to define a network and a priority for that network to build our future. And it's important that we look at it realistically. Obviously, we've had some conversations here about the route that's along the river and other routes we could take up through Rochester to the Twin Cities. If you don't have a rail line today, it costs a lot of money to build a new one. So all those things have to be taken into account, and where the economics help us best and where the people need to move and the freight needs to move, all of these to be considered to come up with a good plan.
You know, while we're on that subject, because freight rail is in the room, the one thing that did concern me, because you've sort of separated out the state rail plan now from that rail forum that you've got, and there's no freight rail there. And those groups are actually going to be recommending routes for federal funding. Unless we have that state rail plan where both passenger rail and freight rail issues were at the table, we could be on a collision course. And so at some point, we're going to have to figure out, before we get too far along on recommending projects and seeking federal funding, to also have had freight rail at the table. Just one more. That's why it would have been helpful to kind of fast-track the state rail plan, but...
Madam Chair, just to clarify, the freight railroads themselves are invited to that forum.
Oh.
It's not any shippers or that type of industry that's missing from the forum.
I see. Representative Mallory, and then I think we're going to have to...
Thank you, Madam Chair. All the meetings I was at regarding the Midwest Regional High-Speed Rail were... They said it was going to be passenger, but now you mentioned freight. Is that part of that system, that it's going to be freight on the high-speed rail?
Madam Chair, Representative, that Midwest Regional Rail Initiative is just a passenger rail project. It happens to run on tracks that are freight rail tracks as well. So anything you do for passenger rail there affects freight and vice versa. So that's why, as we're working through our Minnesota State Rail Plan, We need all of that to be considered together.
In other words, not dedicated right-of-way, and therefore it's really not high-speed rail. We should probably just start calling it intercity rail or something. I think we're, if you want to just wrap up, and members, you notice that they gave you three reports that are simply what they're forwarding for the federal stimulus package, the Transit Rail Candidate Project, the Greater Minnesota Transit, Bike Pedestrian. Those are the lists that they have compiled in the event an economic stimulus package is approved, and that's for the committee's information only, I think. Representative Dunphy?
Madam Chair, I'm a Transit Rail Candidate Project. Project's not in the STIP. How did you come up with those? I mean, I see a lot of flashing lights and gates. I've got a city in my district, Pennock, Minnesota. You turn off Highway 12 onto the main road through Pennock. There's not only gates and flashing lights. There's not even a stop sign up on the place. And I know I've put requests in for it. So how did you decide on these limited projects out there? Because they're not even on the STIP, so.
Madam Chair, Representative Dunphy.
Shatter.
That particular list just refers to grade crossings that are on existing or potential near future passenger rail routes. So that's how we came up with the grade crossing project on there.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, let me follow up then. Are you doing any on the freight rail routes?
Mr.
Chair, Representative, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know if there's somebody here that can answer that question, but I'm not the one that knows that.
Madam Chair, we'll follow up on that as well. And then just in closing, I did want to say that the North Star Commuter Rail funding, those bonds, the big chunk that is $97 million, is virtually fully extended. And
massive federal money, and that project will begin this year.
The $300 million plus project is going to be completed on time and on schedule.
And those last three, which they gave you just information, they may not all be related to GO bonds. Those may be equally relevant to Representative Leader's committee, I think, aren't they? Do you sort out those?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if you're referring to the last page of the...
Transit and bike pedestrian, are all of those only candidates for GO or...?
Madam Chair, they may have multiple opportunities between stimulus funds, GO, and or trunk highway bonds because of the nature, but primarily GO bonds for stimulus federal funds.
Well, thank you. It gives you a feeling for what our past history is, where they currently are, and so we have some sense of should this committee be involved at some point along the way, we're at least as prepared as we can be at this rate. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Metropolitan Council, we have Peter Bell and Judge Hetman. And again, we're just looking at the same thing, kind of update and status report of GO bonding. And you have a handout in front of you, members.
Madam
and
Chair,
you're doing park GO bonding as well,
that's
right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
We're, Madam Chair, there was going to be four issues that we were going to touch on today, an overview of the stimulus package and what our tentative plans are, and then look at bonding for Central Corridor Parks and the UPA.
Okay.
And
welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Peter Bell. I am chair of the Metropolitan Council, and to my right is Judge Shetman, who heads up our government affairs.
Yes.
And I think we're getting
a deal.
Yes. Madam Chair, I'll give you a very, very brief overview of what we are.
Pardon me?
Oh. We're going to, the first area I'm going to cover today is the stimulus package. I will be brief with that.
I think you have that information in your packet. We are now looking at about $87 million in dollars that would come to the state for transit. Madam Chair, this is a moving target in terms of what the dollar amounts will be and what the allowable uses for those dollars. I have been very clear when questioned about any use of stimulus dollars that my first priority would be to use those to deal with our current operating deficit. Madam Chair, as you're well aware, it's $45 million currently for the next biennium, and that does not account for any changes as a result of the February forecast, which will be released in early March. It looks at present that stimulus dollars cannot be used for operating funds, but quite candidly, we might look at, to use an indelicate term, some swap outs of various sorts. We get some federal block grant dollars that we allocate, some to capital, some to operating. I might take the portion that we currently allocate to capital, move it over to operating, and then use the stimulus dollars for what we had originally intended those capital dollars to be used for. There are a number of additional priorities and projects that you have, and I will go over some of those very, very briefly. We're looking at purchasing some vehicles for Metro Mobility as part of our Go Greener initiative, $2.2 million. A second possibility is securing some cabs and coach cars for the North Star commuter rail line, around $10 million for that. We have secured land for an expanded operations facility to the Haywood facility at Ragstock on the outskirts of Minneapolis, and to construct that would be approximately about $60 million. Three-car train on Hiawatha, which is something that we are very interested in doing given the ridership, but you can see what the cost of that is, about $60 million. I won't go through all the other projects, but that is a priority listing of how we would spend the dollars if we are not able to use them to deal with our operating costs. And finally, Madam Chair, I'll just give you three principles that we will be using. As I indicated, operating costs first, capital investments that improve operating efficiency second, and capital investments with minimal operating tails, meaning I would be very hesitant to expand our transit system with these dollars, particularly when I don't have the long-term capital costs or operating costs for that. Most of these dollars, or a large chunk of these dollars, may come down as part of our formula funds, and then we would, two points I would make there, we would likely use the TAB process for that, which allocates our transfer dollars and makes recommendations to the Metropolitan Council. But Madam Chair, we would fully engage the legislature in that process as well, coming before this and other committees, sharing with you what our thoughts are in securing your advice and counsel.
And I will tell you, members, that I've become sort of the least popular person, because what I've been sort of starting to argue is, in a year like this, we have to be so incredibly practical about using all of the funds before us. And I have said, as long as we have a capital investment committee and a potential bill that can do capital, that builds things, that in the metro area we ought to continue to think of that tool as the one that does the capital, and that quarter-cent sales tax operate what is a struggling bus system. I'm very unpopular with the counties when I say that, but I just really think in a year like this, we have to say, what is our first priority? They believe they struggled long and hard for that quarter-cent sales tax and want to use it also to, I think, construct. And so anyway, it's just an ongoing conversation, but it seems, and I've sort of made that argument in Representative Murphy's committee too, that we have some funding streams, but if we eat them all up with capital, then the cash goes fast. And so I just think we have to continue to always ask ourselves, when is geo bonding the wise thing and when it's passed in other budgets.
And Madam Chair, if I could just speak to that and illustrate the concern you raised with one point. Right now we are projecting our deficit to be $45 million for the biennium, $22.5 million. $16 million of that is for North Star, to start up our North Star commuter rail service and the UPA and the like. My point is, quite candidly, is that our capital side of the equation is on much more solid footing than the operating side of our transit system. And there is a line, a very thick, high wall between a capital and operating, and that presents some unique budgetary challenges. So I think to look at can we continue to afford to build where we can't operate is an issue that policymakers are going to need to struggle with and look at and think about and address. Let me move, if I could, Madam Chair, to the...
Rick Goldberg, did I see your hand up?
Madam Chair, I would agree with you 100% on the use of the quarter cent. I think there was an understanding throughout the whole legislative process that it wasn't just for capital. And I'm one who would say that you have to have a plan to not only pay for it, the capital, but you have to also pay for the operating of the capital. And so you have an ally on this side. Madam Chair, if I may ask if that would be okay on, I see in the Central Corridor light rail, I know that there's been some controversies, particularly as the design comes through with around the Capitol building. And let me ask a question first. Is that final design set in stone?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, by and large, it is.
Madam Chair, I like the by and large part of it.
Members, in the event you don't know, what Representative Solberg is referencing is some legislators only became aware recently that the Central Corridor line is scheduled to go north of the Capitol down University, and because the hill is the incline it is, they have to trench it. I don't think you use the word trench, but it'll be a trench. That means, and it can't go too far down because there are tunnels there, but it's enough that there won't be pedestrian access across the street behind the Capitol. And that, plus the fact that we won't have done our capital restoration where we moved air handling units out and all of that, it has of course made some people a little nervous about the timing of our work not being ready for light rail. So that's what
Madam Chair, I think you said it very well, and I think that we, as we look at the need for us to eventually do some work in the Capitol, I mean, major reconstruction of the Capitol. I don't want us to have that be a determining factor of what our options are with that Capitol. And I understand that there were some conversations with the Cap Board, but I just don't think that the decision should not be cast in stone yet. On that, I think that others need to be brought into that conversation because it has a boomeranging effect on other potential designs down the road.
Virginia.
Madam Chair, I would hope you would share with the committee something a lot of folks may not know, but where historically did the streetcar come when it came to the Capitol?
Across the Capitol lawn.
Way down across the Capitol lawn, but not on the lawn, but way down, which would be a very practical route at this time. You'd lose a lot of the construction costs of the steep hill, and you wouldn't run into that mess. And of course, you'd be preserving a bit of Minnesota's history instead of not preserving it.
Madam Chair, can I respond?
Mr. Bell, and I think Representative Carlson has a point too, and I don't know if you want to hear each of their
Sure.
Madam Chair, you and I several times have talked about the capitalism, and in addition to some of the other issues that I've talked about, they're very concerned about the aesthetic. You know, it is a beautiful building, and you and I have met with what Representative Leganis referred to and talked about an alternative. And what I'm a little bit bewildered about this whole process is that it seems to be cast in stone, and yet some of us that have some concerns haven't had that opportunity to get into it. It doesn't appear to me to be that complicated to change the route that we were talking about, maybe to get on Wright Street and then kind of lower end of the Capitol complex. And if I recall, Stephen Kentler turned with the Madam Chair, I think go back on and close some of the sharp turns that you're going to have when you go past the Capitol. But I'm very concerned about the aesthetics and what that means to a very beautiful building that has a lot of history to it today and hopefully will have for many, many years to come.
Mr. Bell.
I can address it briefly, Madam Chair. First, I think it's important to understand how right routes are selected. And perhaps I can just briefly, there's essentially four components to a light rail project. One is called the alternatives analysis. And in point of fact, Ramsey County did the alternatives analysis and selected the route that we are currently operating under. And then after you select the route, you apply to the FTA for preliminary engineering, which is the phase we're in now. And after preliminary engineering, you go to final design. And after final design, you get a full funding grant agreement. Actually, to change the route in the way that is described now would be a major fundamental change that would delay the project for a year or two. Because you would have to do a whole batch of environmental analysis on the route change it. And the FTA would essentially say, you are going back, not from preliminary engineering, but back to the alternatives analysis again. And that would open up, Madam Chair, a number of questions. And a number of things would come back on the table. The University of Minnesota, MPR, just a whole range of things would come flooding back with the delay of, at a minimum, a year and perhaps 2 years because of the environmental impact statements that we would have to reanalyze and refile. So it's not a tweak. When I was responding to Representative Solberg and his question, and I said it's not quite cast in stone, what I really meant is that we could make the most minor tweaks to the line at this point. And really, the threshold is, can we make a change that doesn't trigger the need for a new environmental impact statement? And so that might be moving the station 200 feet or 100 feet or something like that. But when you make a fundamental, what the FTA would determine to be a route change, then they say, whoa, all bets are off. We are back to the alternatives analysis stage, and you have to do that kind of analytical work all over again. And so everyone would need to know that going in with their eyes open, that would provide, I think this, I could say without fear of contradiction, a minimum of a year and perhaps a two-year delay in the project.
Representative Carlson, have follow-up?
Yeah, sure. Is that a question that you've actually asked, or is it an assumption that you're making?
Maybe I could ask Mr. Furman, who is the head of our corridor project office. I don't think we have asked it specifically on the Capitol. I think that what we have confidence is that level of a change would require a new environmental impact statement. And a new environmental impact statement would necessitate a minimum of a year's delay. So I don't think we said exactly would this be for this change precisely, but I think the threshold question is would it require a new impact statement?
I think minimally the question should be asked if it has been a lot of concern about it, and to operate under an assumption that would require that you're describing doesn't raise my comfort level, but maybe the questions and answers here were.
Mr. Furman, welcome to
the chair. Madam Chair and Representatives, I'm Mark Furman. I work for Met Council and serve as the Central Corridor LRT Project Director. Yes, that specific question was asked just about a year ago in the context of the discussion regarding the alignment to the University of Minnesota. The preferred alignment resides on Washington Avenue, and there was a proposal to look at and evaluate an alternative alignment crossing the Mississippi River on a old railroad bridge and then through the East Bank. At that point, I did specifically ask FTA if that would constitute a need to conduct further environmental analyses and alternative analyses. Just as Chair Bell articulated, and they said that if that was the preferred route, that yes, we would go backwards and redo much of the environmental analysis.
And yes, Representative Carlson, and I hope you represent yourself well because people are watching. Representative Carlson has a follow-up, I think.
The question I'm asking is, have you asked about this specific route? I can see where perhaps the university would be in a little different situation, talking about the river and the environmental issues there that probably wouldn't necessarily be here. So my question is, have you raised the question about the Catholic specific issues? And if you haven't, then I'd appreciate it that you would, because then you could testify that yes, you can raise the question about this.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I think that that's a very fair point and question, and if we have not raised that question specifically about the route that you are suggesting, I will make sure that it is raised. But it, I've stated what my opinion is of how the FTA would view that. And I have had the pleasure of working with them now for 6 years, so I have some sense of that. But I think it's a fair point that you're raising. I would hasten to add, however, Madam Chair, that we have also worked with the CAF board about mitigation measures, and we take our responsibility for mitigation matters, whether it is here or at MPR at the University of Minnesota, quite seriously. So we are, I don't want people to go away thinking that we do not take that issue very, very seriously.
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, you brought up the Minnesota Public Radio and mitigation. Is that part of the environmental impact statement to begin with, or is that the small things that you're talking about? Because when I listen to NPR, it doesn't real small for them.
Yeah.
Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, no, first of all, it's important for me to state emphatically that I believe we will be able to mitigate the noise and vibration issue at MPR. Facts are stubborn things, Madam Chair, and I think the facts are clearly on our side that we will be able to do that. That's going to be a part of Representative Solberg, our mitigation plan. We will be doing a detailed mitigation plan as a part of the next phase of our project, which is a final design. We have, however, agreed to do what I am terming a draft mitigation plan for the benefit of MPR, because I think they are a very important institution in the state of Minnesota. They have a world-class facility, a $100 million building, and are very, very concerned about, and I think understandably so, about issues of noise and vibration. And so we are working with their engineers and consultants to do a draft mitigation plan to enhance their comfort level that we'll be able to mitigate the noise and vibration issues there.
Madam Chair, do you have a draft mitigation plan for the capital area?
I don't believe we have done...
it's at least $100 million.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, we identify the impacts of the train going past the Capitol building on University Avenue, and where there is that cut of 3 or 4 feet, we identify that and include in the FEIS document how we will minimize any of the vibration that would be caused by the train's presence there.
And I think to that question, some people on the Capital Restoration Committee, which is the committee that initially sort of discovered this thing, believe that we could still say, oh, we'll have them put, I mean, this is almost an exact quote from one of the members of the committee, an elegant fence in on the street that, that matches the Capitol. And knowing mitigation dollars that are not there, I worry that expectations that we might have won't be able to be met by the budget.
Madam Chair, I share that concern. Right now, the Central Corridor budget is at $914 million. As you know, Madam Chair, all too well, we have to comply with the CEI, and we are right at the threshold of complying with the CEI. And I think it is safe to say the expectations and claims on our budget far exceed what the federal government will allow us to spend and still secure the 50% match. It just simply does not allow for all of the things that people would like. Having said that, I do feel a responsibility to mitigate to the extent possible, very, you know, legitimate issues and claims. We're doing that at the university. We're doing that with NPR. And I think there should be no less expectation by the Cap Board and the Capitol. I take those very, very seriously. I think that we can't be cavalier about that question at all.
Representative Mallory.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, Chairman Bell. I just had a question. Did the legislature ever approve this? What was being done by the Capitol on this road?
Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Mallory, I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't believe, because you've always told me never to, I don't believe we have ever written route into law. I mean, I've sometimes been tempted to, and I've been visited by Mr. Shutnan, who has said, you aren't to write route into the law. So I could say almost certainly we have never written a route into the law.
And Madam Chair, if that were to happen, I mean, if the legislature were to do this, I think, I mean, the legislature, of course, is free to do whatever it wishes, but if we change the route in the way described, we would eliminate Regents Hospital. I am told it would affect ridership, and I need to, it's very important to understand, we're right at the high water mark for the CEI. If costs go up or ridership goes down because of a route change, then we don't meet the CEI and are not eligible for the 50% match. And so if there was an effort to write the route in before knowledge of the impact on the CEI, it could kill the project. Not just delay it for a year, but the feds would, or it wouldn't kill the project, but it would eliminate us from federal consideration of the 50% match.
And I can tell you what Mr. Bell is saying so frustrates other cities and states across the country that some have decided that that frustration of federal funding, which really, in a sense, causes them to build routes wrong sometimes, people have bypassed the money, the federal money, and have said, we're building it ourselves. And, I mean, there are cities and states doing that because of the of those really severe restrictions that the federal dollars bring. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and Chair Bell. When you bring up the CEI and the Cost Effectiveness Index, and we know that we're right up at the top at $914 million, and then we're thinking, well, have you thought of the difference in the cost that this might be? And to those of us who've waited long years for something like this to happen, a year doesn't seem like that much time. I guess if you can save money in a time when we have very little money and do something that would be better for the Capitol as far as being a historic building, it would just appear to me that you can save money by not having a four-foot deep trench on the north side of the Capitol that can't be mitigated with design. It would just seem to me that in order to save money and preserve the historic status of the Capitol, that's certainly a question that should be asked and looked into.
Madam Chair,
comments maybe, but I don't know if there's an answer to that, but sounded like a advice.
Yeah. I'll accept it as that.
Okay. I think we have just 15 minutes. Did I see all the hands? because we have to get the park, maybe we... Yeah.
Let me go very quickly.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I just want to circle back very quickly to a point Representative Solberg mentioned in fairness. While I have been concerned with the dividing line between capital and operating, I want to be very clear. The quarter cent sales tax does pay for operating costs for lines that are supported by CTIB. And so I would just, in the spirit of full disclosure and fairness to that process, while I have some concerns about it, I need to say that they are paying 50% of the operating costs of lines that they support. So let me move to the Central Corridor. I don't know if I, in the interest of time, I won't go through the timeline. I will go to, once there's a budget. Here is the funding formula very quickly for Central. As I mentioned, 914, almost 915 million. The feds pay 50% upon meeting the CEI. The Hennepin County Rail Authority is paying 3%. The Ramsey County Rail Authority is paying 7%. These are, of course, just capital costs. The reason why Ramsey County is paying 7% and Hennepin County is paying 3% is because the line is 70% in Ramsey County and 30% in Hennepin County. The County's Transit Improvement Board, CTIP, the quarter cent sales tax that the five counties have joined, $85 million. This brings in on an annual basis. They will be paying 30% of the cost of it. The state is committed to paying 10% of the cost of this. So far, the state has committed $83 million, and there is $8.5 million that is unfunded. Because we have secured all but the $8.5 million, our competitive position with the FTA is enhanced. That's a very important point, and has not always been the case. State bonding dollars we have received for the Central Corridor to date in the 2005 legislative session, $5.25 million, and the 26th. In the 2006 legislative session, 7.8, and in the 08 legislative session, 70 million for a total of 83.5. The use of those dollars, we have spent 2005 for preliminary engineering, we spent the 5.25. In 06, we have spent 7.6 of the 7.8, so we had 200,000 left from the 06 bonding allotment, and in 2008 we secured a 70 million. We have spent one of that to date. So the amounts spent to date are nearly 14 million of the 83.05. The balance of the funds, we've expended all of the 2005 bonding allotment. We have spent all but 200,000 of the 06 bonding allotment, and we have spent 7 million from the 2008 bonding allotment. The balance of the 69 million will be spent in a final design and when we actually start the construction. We are now going to provide you, if there aren't any questions, if there are, I'd welcome an opportunity to entertain them. We will go to the Urban Partnership Agreement if there are no questions.
And there was matching money required last year. Some of that money was in Representative Leader's bill and some of it was in the bonding bill.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Judge Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, and you're absolutely correct. Last year, the council and MnDOT received a grant for $133.3 million in a competitive federal grant for congestion pricing, transit enhancements, telecommuting, telework, and the use of advanced technologies. And there was a local match of $50 million that was secured. $25 million of that was trunk highway bonds that ended up in Chapter 152. And your committee and the Senate was able to pass $16.672 million worth of general obligation bonding. We had $3.5 million worth of general fund dollars and about $400 million of regional transit bonds that went into that local match. And of that $16.672 million, there were three components that those dollars were used for. The first was the expansion of a single lane to two lanes at 2nd and Marquette Avenue in downtown Minneapolis. The second piece went to design, to acquire land, design, and construct three newer expanded park and rides in the 35W corridor, which was Lakeville in the south and Blaine and Roseville in the north. And the last piece was to accelerate land acquisition, design, and construction of transit stations, park and rides along Cedar Avenue in Lakeville, Apple Valley, and Eagan. And that is happening as we speak as well, and that's, again, along the Cedar Avenue corridor. In your packet, and I know it shows up very, very tiny, and I can provide additional copies if you would like. But this is the breakdown of what I just explained, those three components, and how those state GO bonds are being used. And it's and again, it covers the Marquette and the park and rides in Lakeville, Blaine, Roseville, Eagan, and Apple Valley. And all of those dollars will be, they're not entirely encumbered right now because some of the work is going to be done this spring, but by the end of the state calendar year, when the UPA has to be up and running by the federal government contract, all of those bonds will be used. If you'd like, I can quickly go through the Metro Regional Parks piece unless there are questions about the UPA. Okay. Last year, the House and Senate provided $10.5 million in Metro Regional Parks in the bonding bill. With that, the council was able to match an additional $7 million in bonding. And on this map, what's illustrated here is 29 of the different park grants that were used. And you can see that some of the money was used for acquisition, development, and rehabilitation. And the ones that have just the black dot were funded only with the matching dollars from the Metropolitan Council. And just as a quick summary here, Anoka County, as many of the members know, we have park implementing agencies that we work that we pass these dollars through to. And just a quick summary of the park agencies that were able to use these dollars. Anoka County had five projects at a total of almost $1.9 million. The City of Bloomington had two projects of about $500,000. Carver County had a land acquisition reimbursement of just north of $425,000. Dakota County had four projects worth $1.8 million. The Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board had two projects totaling about $3.5 million. Ramsey County had three projects at $1.6 million. City of St. Paul had seven projects worth $2.5 million. Scott County had a land acquisition reimbursement worth about $600,000. And Three Rivers Parks District had a grant to rehabilitate paved roads, parking lots at the Lake Rebecca Park Reserve worth about $3.7 million. And Washington County had three projects worth about $1.2 million.
Now, Virginius has a question to that slide, is it? Not to this slide, but maybe I'll just ask it and you can pick it up with. I have had so many questions asked to me about the Phelan chain of lakes and the lack of plans for that chain. Is that in process? Are you doing a planning for that?
Madam Chair, Representative Lagunias, I'm going to ask Arnie Steffrew to come answer that question really quick. And just so the committee knows that Chairman Bell and myself have been asked to come meet with Representative Mahoney to talk specifically about Lake Phelan and that project here. But
And for these that you just went over, can we assume that those dollars are being expended then on the local level? They're all moving forward? And maybe he'll be the one to...
Yeah, Madam Chair and members, that is correct. We expect all of those dollars used for those particular projects to be completed, those projects to be completed by the end of 2011.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Arnie Stefford. I'm a planning analyst in the Parks Program. And Representative Virginius, in regards to the Phelan chain of lakes, there has been grants provided to Ramsey County for renovation of the picnic areas at Keller Park. And I know in conversations that I had with former Parks Director Bob Burscheid from the City of St. Paul that he and Greg Mack from Ramsey County were working on the next phase, if you will, for the Phelan Lake portion. To date, we have not seen that updated master plan and proposed capital project list for that, but I presume that they were working on that, I know, this past calendar year. So that's what I can tell you at this point.
Well, it's just one of the, and now I'm hearing conflicting things here. obviously is into my district, and Representative Mahoney has talked to me, but so have a lot of other folks. So what they are looking for is some plan, big picture plan for this whole, I don't want to say watershed, but maybe that's correct, because that is what is lacking. That plan hasn't been updated for years, and so as we put little pieces on the ground, if it doesn't work into a big picture plan, that's problematic.
And members, and to the people sitting at the table too, one of the reasons we're doing this this year, this committee has great intensity about getting all of those bonding dollars that have been authorized out there and actually encumbered. And though we haven't often asked for progress reports, I think we're pushing to say if those dollars have been authorized. We really think a lot of these projects put people to work. And so the faster we can get these projects out there and going, and I think that's one of the reasons why we're actually taking the time to ask the question about past bonding and what's encumbered at this point. So that's a sentence. And while you're still up there, members, one of the Minneapolis projects was we asked for a report, and the Met Council gave us that report, which is in your packet in the green folder. And there is a response. So there's a report from the Metropolitan Council, and then a response from the community design team at the East Phillips neighborhood. So those that was required in law, you've done that, and they have a response. I'm assuming you've gotten the response too.
Madam Chair and members, you're correct. And actually, just before the meeting, Chairman Bell and Representative Clark and I had a conversation outside regarding this particular project, and I think we're all kind of on the same page here. So I think we're in good shape. The last thing I wanted to point out is in last year's bonding bill, there was about a little over $7 million of pass-through grants that were given to the council, and we passed through to other agencies or municipalities, because those state bonds have to come through a state agency. And I just wanted to let you know that those pass-through grants are being shown here behind me, and I'm also told that those bonds will be they're in the process of being encumbered, and the expected completion date for all of these projects is the end of 2011 as well. So we went and wanted to make sure that when you look on the bottom or the balance sheet of the bonds that were given to the council, that we wanted to make sure that we talked about those pass-through grants as well.
Mr. Shetman, I noticed somewhere in the unallotment report that some of the UPA money was unallotted, and I understand that's because bids came in lower for technology or something. Was that Representative Leader's money or mine? Do either of us have a balance somewhere? whenever we see money not encumbered, we always wonder if there's a balance somewhere that one of us should know about.
Madam Chair and Representative Leader, I will find that out for sure. And we are again in the process of doing some of these bids right now, because we really had to get that process and project done under the gun. So I will make sure that we follow up with you. And the last thing that I want to add is that I want to thank you for granting the council those bonds. We do know that they are given out very competitively, and we appreciate your support on the park and the UPA. I know that was a big one to ask for last year when we came back with the Central Corridor as well, but I think that we're good stewards of those bonds, and appreciate your support on them.
I think we have concluded, and we thank you very much for being here. And our time is up. Please note there is not a meeting next Tuesday. And on Thursday, we do the PFA, Veed, and Bowser bonding updates. And if you have particular issues there, please join us then. Meeting is adjourned.